We gather to seek, to find, and to share the promise of honest religion. And so, it is a sacred time, this, and a sacred place, this.
A place where questions more profoundly answers.
Vulnerability more powerful than strength.
And peace that passes all understanding.
It is a sacred time, this. Let us begin it together in song.
This is Untitled by Vivian Pomeroy. Forgive us that often we forgive ourselves so easily and others so hardly. Forgive us that we expect perfection from those to whom we show none. Forgive us for repelling people by the way we set a good example. Forgive us the folly of trying to improve a friend. Forbid that we should use our little idea of goodness as a spear to wound those who are different. Forbid that we should feel superior to others when we are only more shielded. And may we encourage the secret struggle of every person.
Lighting the candles has a very special meaning for this congregation. One Sunday morning, there was a lady that fell in the back of the church. And while they were taking her out, she turned to me and said, "I promised a friend who is sick that I would light a candle for her this morning. Would you do it for me?" And I said, "Yes," and I did. So right now, you're invited to go light a candle to mark some special memory, some special feeling, or some special relationship, or any other reason that might be known only to you. For our prayer together this morning, let us meditate on a poem called Forgiveness, author unknown. To forgive is not to forget. To forgive is really to remember that nothing is perfect, that each of us stumbles when we want so much to stay upright, that each of us says things we wish we had never said, that we can all forget that love is more important than being right. To forgive is to remember that we are so much more than our mistakes, that we are often more kind and caring, that accepting another's flaws can help us accept our own. To forgive is to remember that the odds are pretty good that we might soon need to be forgiven ourselves. That life sometimes gives us more than we can handle gracefully. To forgive is to remember that we have room in our hearts to begin again and again and again. Good morning. According to Jewish tradition, the world cannot exist without forgiveness. To forgive means to pardon another person. Pardon another person without harboring resentment. When we forgive another person, it's an act of kindness toward ourselves and an act of kindness toward the other person. In Buddhism, forgiveness removes unhealthy emotions that harm our mental well-being. Forgiveness gives us peace of mind. Real forgiveness means letting go. The Bible and the Quran share many stories in common. One is the story of Joseph. Perhaps the Joseph story is the most beautiful and the most fascinating story in the Bible and the Quran. Quran, Surah 12, verse 3 says, "We do relate unto thee the most beautiful of stories." Telling the story takes 15 chapters in the Bible and 111 verses in the Quran. Joseph was the 11th son and favorite son of his father Jacob. Joseph was a bit of a spoiled brat. He tattled on his brothers. Jacob gave Joseph a multicolored coat, which became a symbol of favoritism, favorite status. Joseph liked to put on his fancy coat and strut before his brothers and tell his brothers about his dreams. Two dreams were really special. He said, "I dreamed that all of us had sheaves of wheat, and your sheaves bowed down and worshipped my sheaf." Another time, Joseph said, "I had another dream. This time, the sun, the moon, and the 11 stars all bowed down to me." In the Quran version, Jacob warned Joseph not to tell his brothers about the dreams, because he said it will only make them hate you. One day, the brothers saw Joseph coming toward the sheep fields. They said, "The dreamer is coming." Their feelings of anger, resentment, and revenge were reignited. The brothers threw Joseph in a pit. Then they sold him to slave traders. Joseph was taken to Egypt and sold on the slave market. He was sold to an Egyptian official named Potiphar. And later, Joseph was thrown into prison on a false charge. In prison, Joseph became known as the one who could interpret dreams. Joseph not only had dreams, he interpreted dreams. Joseph's special ability made him known around the prison, and also his special talent of interpreting dreams even got to the Pharaoh himself. Pharaoh had a dream about 7 healthy ears of corn and 7 withered ears of corn. Joseph interpreted the dream to mean 7 years of abundant crops, followed by 7 years of famine. After interpreting Joseph's dream, Joseph rose to be the Egyptian official, second only to Pharaoh, sort of the Joe Biden of Egypt. Joseph's brothers came from their homeland to Egypt seeking food during a terrible famine. At first, the brothers did not recognize Joseph, but Joseph did recognize his brothers. Joseph broke into sobs so loud the Egyptians in the next room heard him crying. Joseph wept with his brothers and forgave them. In the Quran, it says Joseph not only forgave his brothers, but treated them with honor and kindness. Andrew Lloyd Webber considered the Joseph story so beautiful and fascinating that he wrote a musical based on the story, Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat. What did Lloyd Webber find so beautiful? Maybe it was the forgiveness and kindness in Joseph. During my seminary years, I did pastoral care work at Austin State Hospital and the Travis County Jail. At the hospital one day, I visited a man, a Vietnam veteran. He told me that he took 800 aspirin tablets and lay down on his sofa to die. He was taken to the emergency room, treated in the hospital, and then transferred to Austin State Hospital. He described to me his near-death experience in great detail. He was drawn through space and time, coming finally to a beautiful, warm, glowing light. As he came closer and closer to the beautiful, dazzling light, he felt enveloped in love. He felt completely accepted, completely loved, and completely forgiven. I replied, "That is a great thing to hear, that your near-death experience made you feel loved, accepted, and forgiven." Then he said, "That is the good part, but there is a bad part. I did feel completely forgiven, but I cannot forgive myself." Taken by surprise, I said, "But I don't understand. If you feel completely forgiven, why are you unable to forgive yourself?" Sadly, he shook his head. "I just cannot forgive myself for the terrible things I did in Vietnam. I visited this man 3 or 4 more times, trying to help him come to a place of being able to forgive himself. But the last time I visited him, he kept repeating, 'I cannot forgive myself for the terrible things I did in Vietnam.' One of the saddest things in all the world is not being able or willing to forgive ourselves." We know the prayer, "Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses as we forgive those who trespass against us." This prayer suggests that food is a basic necessity of our life, and we accept this without question. This prayer also suggests that forgiving and being forgiven are just as basic and just as necessary to our daily life. As we forgive and are forgiven, we come alive and really live. During seminary, and for some time after, I did work at the Travis County Jail, both the location in Del Valle and the downtown jail. One day, an inmate asked to see a chaplain, and I responded. He came into the visiting room and took a seat at the table. We talked for several minutes, breaking the ice conversation. I then asked him, "What brought you here to this place?" He put his hands over his face and ducked down in his chair and said, "I can't tell you. There is too much shame and too much pain." But after several minutes, he told me his story. He said, "One afternoon, I drank a lot of beer, and I was drunk. I went over to my father's house. In his garage, we got into an argument that escalated into furious words of anger. In my raging, drunken anger, I picked up an iron tool laying nearby, and I hit my father in the head. I killed him. I killed my own father. My father was a good man. He loved his family and his many friends. He was always helping people who were having a hard time in life. You cannot imagine the pain that I have caused. There's the pain of taking away my own father, the pain of taking away my mother's husband, and the pain of taking away the grandfather of my children. And I took away the grandfather of all my nieces and nephews. But the greatest pain of all is that I will never be able to ask my father to forgive me for this terrible thing I did." At the end of our conversation, he told me this, "I know I will have to pay the penalty for what I did. But a few days ago, I was looking out the window here, and I saw a beautiful rainbow. It reminded me that God promised to love us forever. I do believe that God has forgiven me. As I left the inmate, I remembered my own story. When I was in high school, I had been out all night drinking beer with a couple of buddies. When I got home, my father and I got into an argument that escalated into an angry confrontation. In my alcohol-inspired rage, I hit my father in the forehead with my fist. I remember the surprised look in his eyes, surprised that his own son would do such a thing. What if there had been an iron tool laying nearby, within my reach? What if I had hit my father with an iron tool instead of my fist? What if I were in the inmate's shoes, never able to ask my father to forgive me? What if I were headed for life in prison or the death penalty? In 1992, my father was dying of cancer. I remembered how I hit my father while I was drunk. Feeling of guilt and shame swept through my entire being. Tears flowed down my cheeks. I did not realize how much guilt and shame I had been repressing for all those years. And I decided that I had to go to him and ask him to forgive me before he died. Can you imagine how I would have felt if he had died before I was able to ask him to forgive me? He was sitting in the living room, weak from cancer treatment. I dropped down on one knee beside his easy chair and said, "Dad, do you remember when I was in high school and came home drunk one morning? We got into an argument, and I hit you in the forehead with my fist. Dad, I'm so sorry I did that. Please forgive me." My dad put his arm around my shoulder and said, "I don't even remember that happening." Did he literally mean that he did not remember? Or did he mean that it was as though it had never happened? In that moment, I knew that he had forgiven me long, long ago. In that moment, I felt fully alive. The inmate was not able to ask his father to forgive him. I was fortunate to have time to ask my father to forgive me before he died. When we forgive another person, we set ourselves free of resentment. And we set the other person free. We free ourselves and the other person from the past and free to enjoy the present. We free ourselves and the other person for a new relationship. Look at our three candles. Over the first candle are the words, "To come alive." When we forgive and are forgiven, we come alive. Over the second candle are the words, "To seek truth." When we forgive and are forgiven, we live in reality. The words over the third candle, "To heal our world." When we forgive and are forgiven, we heal our world. And we heal this very community. Forgiveness happens. May it happen around us. May it happen among us. And may it happen through us. May we pray the prayer this morning that each one of us will help to bring healing to our community, to our city, to our country, and to the world.